In the shadowy world of Conclave, desire and danger intertwine in a complex web of relationships. This novella bridges Killswitch and Nightfall in the Devil's Night series, cultivating a devoted underground following that spreads primarily through word of mouth. What makes this work particularly intriguing is its distribution method. Offered free online, while physical copies become coveted collector's items, creating an almost cult-like status among readers. The exploration of power dynamics and forbidden attractions has made it a frequent topic in online book clubs, with readers dissecting its moral ambiguities and psychological complexities. As we step into this dark, sensual world, prepare to confront uncomfortable truths about desire, loyalty, and the invisible threads that bind us to those we can neither live with nor without. Damon's world balances precariously between control and chaos. When he allows Iverson to stay with Christiane, his instruction to Rika, "Anything beyond tonight goes through me," functions as both boundary and assertion of his central position in their network. Winter's pregnancy announcement sends shockwaves through their circle. Her decision to take cameras offline represents a rare and meaningful withdrawal from their transparent existence, a small but significant act of privacy in their surveilled world. The Conclave emerges as Damon's tactical response to growing tensions. Like its Vatican namesake, this gathering requires complete isolation until resolution. Michael's yacht Pithom serves as the perfect venue, neutral yet inescapable, surrounded by water. When Misha announces his plan to take care of Will's situation, immediate conflict erupts. Their fight represents years of tension over leadership and legitimacy. Rika's intervention with water serves as both practical solution and metaphor, a symbolic interruption of their power struggle, demonstrating that true power lies in unification rather than dominance. Standing by the window, cigarette in hand, I contemplate my tangled responsibilities. The smoke curls upward like my vanishing certainties. The clash between Damon and Misha still echoes, two powerful forces in constant collision. My mother approaches, noting Damon's influence. "He's rubbing off on you," she says, eyeing the cigarette. "But we both know my choices preceded Damon's return." In family photographs, I notice how Iverson inherited our great-grandfather's black hair, but not his penetrating eyes. Genetics, the physical manifestation of legacy. "When are you going to tell him?" she asks. My father's will acknowledges not just me, but any children my mother might have. Damon, the half-brother who never knew our father, is entitled to half of everything. I've kept his portion in trust for Ivor. "I should tell him," I admit. "But Damon is proud of being self-made. Would he want this inheritance, or see it as charity diminishing his achievements?" This secret joins others awaiting resolution at our conclave. Family, legacy, inheritance, these aren't just matters of money, but questions of identity. In private yacht conversations, Michael and I discuss our relationship's evolution. He imagines an alternate timeline with a more traditional beginning on my 18th birthday. Our social circle maintains its unique dynamic, with Alex capturing moments through photography, while Samara, Lev, and David maintain their connections nearby. We've established carefully negotiated boundaries. Michael demonstrates both trust and possession in group interactions, particularly with Lev, always ensuring our primary bond remains clear. "We'll build a family together, if that's what you want, but our relationship is non-negotiable." Michael addresses my fertility concerns as obstacles to overcome, rather than barriers. His commitment remains absolute. Alex shares her photography while offering insights about Lev. Michael announces our wedding date, Devil's Night, 1 month away, creating both excitement and urgency as we continue our mission to locate Will. Later, I playfully suggest he take my surname, Fane, instead of becoming Rika Christ, bringing levity to our planning. Outside the hospital, I leave Will another message. "I miss you. We all miss you. We need you." This moment feels incomplete without him. Our circle has always been defined by both presence and absence. When Rika threatens to tell our mother about my child, something hardens inside me. No, I tell her firmly. Christiane forfeited grandmother status through years of abandonment. Rika argues for blood ties, but I've built my own family. Winter, our friends, their future children. That's all the family my son needs. In the hospital room, Alex sleeps near my son's bassinet. My boy wears a new-to-the-crew beanie, already part of our unconventional family. I help Winter shower, torn between wanting more children and fearing putting her through this again. Winter suggests what binds us is l'appel du vide, the call of the void, that impulse to jump when at a precipice, the attraction to danger most resist but we embrace. It's what draws us together, a recognition of that same dangerous impulse in each other. Our unnamed son has my black hair. Tomorrow will reveal whose eyes he has. Regardless, he's already part of something larger, a family defined by our shared call of the void. Will's absence looms over the group like a specter. The suggestion his parents institutionalized him introduces a chilling possibility that even as adults, they remain vulnerable to those who once controlled their lives. This fear especially resonates with Damon, whose childhood was defined by abandonment. Each unanswered call to Will deepens their concern, representing desperate attempts to reconnect a severed part of their collective identity. Missing Damon's son's birth isn't just missing an event, but a milestone in their shared journey. Misha's claim that Will's parents are lying about his humanitarian work suggests coordinated deception, triggering the group's protective instincts. The conclave transforms into a potential rescue mission, with Michael and Rika's wedding creating a deadline. Find Will before Devil's Night. Will's empty place underscores their vulnerability. If he can vanish, anyone can. Until he's found, part of their collective identity remains missing, leaving them all exposed. The day my son enters the world transforms everything. Despite my phone dying and Winter going into labor while shopping, all fades when I witness his birth. 8 pounds, 11 ounces of possibility, crowned with black hair like mine. In that moment, I resolve to be everything my father wasn't. This tiny human redefines responsibility for me. My first question to the doctor, how soon can she get pregnant again, shows how completely I've embraced fatherhood. I'm already imagining building the family I never had. After everyone leaves, I watch my newborn breathe while Winter sleeps. Each inhalation becomes miraculous evidence of continuation. I study his features, wondering which parts he'll carry forward and which he'll reinvent. When Rika suggests telling Christine about my child, I refuse immediately. The woman who failed to fight for me doesn't get automatic access to my son. The family I'm creating with Winter will be defined by consistent love, not conditional attention. My son, still unnamed but already new to the crew, represents more than continuation. He's my chance to heal generational wounds by refusing to inflict new ones.